It's July 2015, and Andy Greenberg is driving his Jeep Cherokee through downtown St. Louis. The weather is normal enough for a summer's day in Missouri, clear and warm. So Andy finds it a bit frustrating when the windshield wipers start up, especially as he can't seem to switch them off. Then the air conditioning turns up full blast, even though Andy hasn't touched the controls. Next, the radio switches on, playing music at maximum volume. Andy presses the button to turn it off, but it keeps on going. At this stage, it's pretty clear what's happening. Andy's car has been hacked. But thankfully, it's not a malicious attack. Andy is in fact a journalist, and he's recruited two ethical hackers to target his Jeep so that he can write about it for Wired magazine. The hackers accessed the car's controls through the infotainment system and were able to control the brakes and the steering whilst also tracking the car's location. And Andy wasn't the only one whose car was vulnerable. There were 417,000 cars on the road with the exact same weakness. In response, Jeep pulled the Cherokee model in question, and the US Congress developed a bill addressing the regulation of automotive cybersecurity. But this was all happening 4 years ago, and as we've been learning in this series, big changes are on the horizon. Andy Greenberg's observations in 2015 are just the tip of the cybersecurity iceberg when it comes to connected and autonomous vehicles. So how are the automotive and technology industries going to face this challenge? And what do we need to do to keep vehicles secure from cyber attack? Welcome back to Journey Makers, the podcast exploring not just what the future looks like, but how we're going to get there. Each month, we explore a new question around the future of mobility. And in this episode, we're looking at cybersecurity and asking what threat hackers will present to driverless vehicles. Cybercrime is a huge global problem. Over 44,000 ransomware attacks took place worldwide in 2018. Hackers create 300,000 new pieces of malware daily, attempting a new attack every 39 seconds. And until now, the vast majority of these attacks has been directed at devices like laptops, tablets, and smartphones. But vehicles are becoming the hackers' next target. Between 2015 and 2018, the number of cyber attacks on connected vehicles increased by a multiple of 6. Now, this is partly due to the increasing computerization of our vehicles. The cars that many of us drive around in today contain hundreds of small computers that hackers can attempt to commandeer. Connected and autonomous vehicles introduce an even greater level of complexity as they connect and communicate with the world and other vehicles around them. This means that both the network and the vehicle have to be absolutely secure from cyber attack. It's a multifaceted issue, but luckily we have a panel of guests to help us unlock every angle. We have...
My name is Yaron Sala. I'm a security architect working for Cisco in the connected car domain.
And...
My name's Simon Finn. I'm a security architect working in Cisco's security and trust organization.
And finally...
So my name is Andrea Radu. I'm a final year PhD student at the University of Birmingham. And my topic is automotive security from the perspective of the in-vehicle securities.
Before we start thinking about cabs and cybersecurity, it's helpful to think about the kind of vehicles that we drive around in today. After all, Andy Greenberg wasn't in a cab. It was 2015, and he was in a standard vehicle with a driver. Birmingham University PhD student Andrea Radu thinks of cars today as a collection of computers on wheels. Computers that are vulnerable to cyber attack.
With respect to cars nowadays, what people don't generally realise is that there are a lot of electronic components in them, and there are computing units, so basically little computers in your cars, and they take care of functionality, like for example, your engine should run in optimal parameters, or when you want a soft light in your interior, or when you lock and unlock your car with your keys. And all these are basically computing units that run software, millions of lines of code.
The computing units that Andrea is talking about are known as engine control units, or ECUs.
This has been introduced somewhere in the 1980s or even before that. And initially, it was only a very small part of this functionality that was relayed to these computing units. But nowadays, pretty much everything that your car does will have an ECU, as we call them, electronic control units, that backs it up.
These ECUs share information with each other. Andrea highlights this as a potential security issue and says that much of the technology used in vehicles today isn't actually all that different to solutions developed decades ago.
For example, all these components that you have in your car, they have to communicate to each other such that they collaborate in order to make your car run. And the way they communicate through each other is through what is called the CAN bus. And again, it was developed in the 80s, 83, I believe. And it's a broadcast protocol. So one component will just send its message on this network. And while it's fault tolerant, so electromagnetic interference and whatnot isn't an issue, it has no security properties. It has no authentication. So you like the other components see the message, but they don't really know where it came from. And it definitely has no encryption. So encryption isn't a massive issue on the internal CAN network, but it's a property that could be desired in the future, especially if you will start sending personal data between these components. In that case, that might need encryption of sorts.
In addition to the need for encryption of personal data, Andrea highlights another cybersecurity concern for current vehicles.
The cars we have today, the smart ones, they'll have a data connection, just like your phone, or they'll have a Wi-Fi hotspot to which you can connect, but that also broadcasts to the vicinity. So some other people might connect, and some of those people might not be so well-intended. So it's important to realize that the more we increase this convenient wireless interfaces in our cars, the more we expose our cars to malicious attackers, even remotely.
As connectivity within vehicles increases, so does the number of potential threat vectors. Essentially, each connection is like a revolving door. While the vehicle can send information out to the internet, malicious actors will also try to get in. Now, this, of course, becomes much more complex with connected and autonomous vehicles that depend on their ability to connect with the world around them. Yaron Seller, security architect at Cisco, explains the impact that this might have.
So perhaps, the bad guys can get really creative. So maybe locking you in your own car and asking you for ransom, and I will release you only after you pay. And I can harass people, like activating all kinds of devices in the car, maybe the wipers, maybe the radio, messing up with the display, not in a way that endangers your life perhaps, but it does create a very strong annoyance. And of course the most severe risk is when it gets to safety of people, people in the car and people outside the car. So when I am able to affect the car movement by applying the brakes at the wrong time, by messing with the steering, playing with the speed of the car perhaps, then of course I can create an accident and we are talking people lives here. Now of course the crown jewel from the attacker's perspective is to be able to do all these things remotely.
So, starting with the vehicles themselves, how do we design and build cabs to protect them from hacking? Well, Yaron says that we've actually already come a long way.
The low-hanging fruit, by the way, of being able to hack cars in a very simple, almost trivial manner is mostly gone by now. So they were able to fix all the simple bugs, the simple configurations that they needed to set up so that it won't be so simple to hack cars. They already took care of that.
So far, so good. But what about more complex types of cybersecurity? To defend against a more sophisticated hack, Yaron highlights the importance of wrapping security around every element of the vehicle, especially those engine control units or ECUs that we mentioned before.
Securing the car itself with multiple layers of security, starting from the ECU that's on the outbound, the ECU that's actually connecting, and then securing those inside as well, so that they don't trust blindly whoever speaks to them, any ECU that speaks to them. So multiple layers of defense and purchasing the best of breed of security products that are being developed by the startups companies, integrating them into the vehicle.
However, Yaron acknowledges that the foundation for vehicle security is the network.
The main threat that really keeps security folks at the OEMs and awake at night is gaining remote control over a vehicle. That's really the main threat. And I agree that defense in depth is the right approach. So you need to secure it at the infrastructure level, at the cellular operator, network configuration level, that's not even in the car. It's just isolating the connected car from all other entities on that network so that I cannot, say, dial from my smartphone to a connected car.
For Yaron, security depends on a combination of a robust network and in-vehicle cyber defense. You can't have one without the other. And when it comes to designing secure vehicles for the future, Yaron believes that original equipment manufacturers, or OEMs as they are known, already have a good framework in place. It's actually the same framework that they've been using to keep passengers safe for years.
There is a mature standard that's been used for a while for car safety. So the OEMs realized, the OEMs and all the other players in this ecosystem realized that they need a similar standard which will deal with cybersecurity. So they took pretty much the same rigorous, systematic approach that they've been using for car safety, and they're trying to apply the same approach, same principle for car cybersecurity.
But who will be in charge of shaping and enforcing that principle? As we discussed in our very first episode, governments around the world are beginning to shape regulation to tackle this challenge. In 2018, the UK government published a set of standards for cybersecurity in self-driving cars. These standards, which are the first of their kind, were produced with the help of academics and experts from the car industry and the National Cybersecurity Centre. However, it's not yet mandatory for automotive businesses to adopt these standards. Although they may one day become law, currently they just serve as guidelines. Yaron believes that this is the right approach. He argues that responsibility for cybersecurity should be shared between regulators and OEMs. He says OEMs should take a proactive approach in ensuring the utmost security for every vehicle that they produce. And the regulator should then act as a second pair of eyes, looking on to ensure that OEMs are meeting those required standards.
Everything is moving very fast within the vehicle's domain. So automation, autonomy, digitization, connectivity, it's all happening so fast that the regulators are finding it hard to keep pace. It's important to have the regulator active and examine what's happening and maybe stop things that are being done carelessly. But we cannot rely on the regulator. The OEMs have to take a leading role, I think, in this area.
To stay ahead of the hackers, car manufacturers will need to share information and tactics with one another. When Niels Bohlen, an engineer at Volvo, invented the three-point seatbelt in 1959, it was decided that the patent would be opened up to other car manufacturers. The invention had far more value as a free life-saving tool than something to profit from. And in the same way, Yaron says that security should never be a competitive issue.
The OEMs recognize that they are not competing on this point. They all want to have their cars as secure as possible. And so they created these forums of collaboration and where they share information. They are together setting up the right standards that they will all follow later, just like they did with the car safety. They did that already once. They are repeating the same exercise again. So collaboration is key, and I'm really happy to say that they are not competing with each other, on this front. They are really collaborating in a very nice manner. Now, I wouldn't say that this will eliminate the threat completely. We haven't been able to do it in the PC arena, eliminating all security bugs. There are still, every once in a while, you see a bug and there's a worm or a virus that succeeds penetrating through. But we can make it secure at an acceptable level. And of course, sharing information between all parties. And once something happens, immediately patching it and closing the holes.
Simon Finn is a cybersecurity solutions architect at Cisco. He agrees that car manufacturers are making a big effort to collaborate on cybersecurity.
I'd add to that that they're not just collaborating with each other, but they're also inviting expertise from non-traditional industries, like the IT industry, obviously, but to engage. So they're actually seeking out expertise and actively involving people and companies like Cisco in their endeavours.
But it's not just the IT sector that has a place in this conversation. According to Andrea, it's important that car manufacturers collaborate with academics too.
They should also start maybe cooperating more with researchers. I think that would be very nice. That would be ideal because cooperation is really key. In research, we take crazy weird ideas and we go like, does this work? You know, sometimes, many times it doesn't work, but at some point you will have something that clicks and you'll have an attack, and they should try to cooperate with us and understand our view of things and maybe incorporate that.
Spaces like SMLL exist for this exact purpose, to facilitate collaboration across different industries and disciplines in order to produce the safest possible vehicles for people to use. Bringing expertise together in this way means that we'll find the best solutions for everyone in a shorter time. But for now, let's return to Simon. He argues that cybersecurity goes way beyond the vehicle. The most important thing, he says, is the network. The network is a platform allowing self-driving vehicles to communicate. So if the network suffers a cyber attack, it puts all of those vehicles at risk. For this reason, Simon suggests that cloud infrastructure should be considered critical national infrastructure and provided with the same protection as the gas mains and power stations.
I think that we see similar regulation happening, for example, with critical infrastructure, and transportation is critical infrastructure. And I think that as we sort of move further down the path, the roadside infrastructure that we see, the cloud-based infrastructure will all be considered to be part of that sort of critical infrastructure ecosystem. And we need to make sure that they are all protected accordingly, as quite literally people's lives are at risk.
Establishing cloud as critical national infrastructure is just one part of it. For Simon, real security will only be achieved if vehicle systems and roadside infrastructure are totally integrated.
You know, we know systems can be fooled fairly easily individually, but if we take multiple systems and correlate them, they become much harder to fool. So it's not necessarily just video and sonar. It can be, you know, roadside information presented to the car, etc., etc. And if they correlate all of that information, it's going to be much harder for people to disrupt those sorts of technologies and actually have a real impact.
According to this logic, if you wanted to hack into a cab and make it think it was in the wrong location, you wouldn't just have to trick the GPS system. You would also have to fool the vehicle's roadside cameras, sensors, and mapping software, since all are working in harmony to create a consistent, verified picture of what's going on around the vehicle. Integrating these systems will be a big step forward for autonomous vehicle cybersecurity. And when we get this right, Simon suggests, we'll be able to access the true benefits of cabs. Fewer accidents, more efficient journeys, and less emissions.
At the end of the day, I believe that the safety aspects of this far outweighs the threats, and it's something that we should be pushing towards, obviously with that in the back of our minds that we do need to build that security in and really enable this industry with security. I think security plays a key role here in disrupting, well, I suppose, the ecosystem and driving that adoption of these technologies. If we can drive security and educate as much about security and really build, you know, that security mentality in across the industry as much as we can help enable and effectively save lives.
Without strong cyber defences, we won't be able to use the CAVs that will allow us to move around in a cleaner and safer way. In this way, cybersecurity is key to unlocking a world of safer mobility. Of course, there's another important aspect which needs consideration, and that involves data. When you connect any device to the internet, it becomes a sensor, capable of collecting and transmitting information about its users, or in the case of a vehicle, its passengers. Today's cars, for example, collect as much as 25 gigabytes of data every hour. This data can be used to determine where you live, how many kids you have. It can even work out when you gain weight. Self-driving vehicles will have far more powerful data collecting capabilities. And this throws up important questions for consumers. What happens to the information that your CAV collects about you? Where does it go? How do you keep it safe? And who, ultimately, is responsible for this?
I'd say that the responsibility around privacy lies with whoever is responsible for collecting and sharing that data. This sort of data is something that's going to be shared and reshared as there are multiple interested parties that require this information. I think privacy is obviously a key issue, but a lot of privacy data isn't needed for a lot of the use cases. So we need to be careful when looking at a data sharing framework, how we're sharing data, who we're sharing that data with, but also including information if decisions are going to be made on it as to its sort of security, its availability, its accuracy, you know, reliability information when we do that.
For Simon, any organisation that collects data through CAVs has an obligation to keep it secure. This principle is in line with recent data protection legislation, such as GDPR. GDPR affects almost every organisation, irrespective of industry, so in this respect, car manufacturers aren't unique. However, data security is an issue OEMs will have to think very carefully about, especially as self-driving vehicles become more and more sophisticated at recording information related to their passengers. So, let's return to our big question. What threat will hackers present to driverless vehicles? It's difficult to predict exactly, but it's clear that connecting cars to the internet opens up threats as well as opportunities. As journalist Andy Greenberg proved in 2015, there is a very real risk that cars can be virtually hijacked. It's inevitable that connected and autonomous vehicles and the networks they connect with will be targeted by hackers. Preventing these attackers from being successful will require collaboration, as both vehicles and infrastructure will need to be secure. Car manufacturers, IT experts, academic partners, and regulators will all need to work together on the issue and be proactive. Cybersecurity should not be an issue of competition, and staying a step ahead of malicious hackers will only be made possible by sharing important insights and information. And with that, we come to the end of the road for this month. Thanks as ever to our experts, Andrea, Yaron, and Simon, for joining us on the journey. Make sure to join us next time for an exploration of vehicle design, as we seek to understand what connected and autonomous vehicles might look, feel, and sound like. In the meantime, you'll find Journey Makers wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you've got a big question you'd like to hear us tackle in an upcoming episode, then send us a tweet at SMLL_London. Until next time, see you in the future. How will you be getting there?